Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Whatever network we're coming to, we bring in the pain. Just letting you know right now. Okay, I know everybody's sad that, oh, it ain't gonna be the show. The show is still here, baby. You can never kill the four horsemen. We coming. And we coming to take spots. We coming to kick ass. And we coming to take names.
Take names!
And we doing it our way.
Hey, I love so, it. Okay? Let's go play, Jack. I'm ready to go.
And, of course, that is the voice of Shaquille O'Neal during the tail end of Thursday's NBA pregame show on TNT. But it was not the last edition of the NBA on TNT. We'll talk about that and more on the new edition of the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis, joined as always by Armand Brody. Please subscribe to the SMW podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and more. So as I said, it's not the end of the NBA on TNT yet, because the New York Knicks went into Madison Square Garden, a house of horrors for them in this postseason, their own home arena where they were under 500, and won Game 5 to force a Game 6 back in Indiana on Saturday. We'll talk a little bit more about the NBA on TNT and the NBA playoffs and the potential of a Thunder-Pacers finals a little bit later in the podcast. We're actually going to start today with the NASCAR Coca-Cola 600, which was the first race ever carried exclusively on a streaming service. It aired on Amazon Prime Video. This race had 2.7 million viewers on Sunday, which is the smallest audience since at least 1994. Actually, 1993. Not only was it the least watched in over three decades, it was also way, way, way below the Indy 500, which moved to Fox this year and got over 7 million. So a lot of really interesting stuff going on here. You have the debut of NASCAR on a streaming service. You have IndyCar taking NASCAR's place on Fox and benefiting from it. And you have, obviously, a lot of fans who really enjoyed the Amazon coverage and a lot of fans who didn't because they didn't see it. So it's a lot of interesting dynamics that have a lot to do with where this industry is going. I guess where I would start with it is 2.7 million viewers a good audience for the Coca-Cola 600? Well, I kind of think it's not that bad. I mean, obviously, it's the least watched Coca-Cola 600 in 32 years at least, but it was only down 15% from last year on Fox. Now, last year on Fox was rain affected, ended up overlapping with the Indy 500, so not necessarily your normal Coca-Cola 600 audience. But when you consider that some of the races this year that moved from Fox to FS1 declined 30-40%, 15% is not that bad, and it's hard to really see how it could have done better. I spoke to Brian Herbst of NASCAR today. We're taping Friday. He said that the viewership was actually higher than what their expectation would have been going in. I don't necessarily think it's a bad number, even with the three-decade low, even with the yawning gap versus the Indy 500. But Armand, I'm curious what your thoughts are, not just on this specific race, but what we're talking about here with the shift away from cable to streaming and the viewership sacrifices that are being made.
Yeah, that's the word I was thinking about, sacrifices. There seems to be a mentality that's been adopted here where executives are saying, we are okay with taking the hit in the short term if it means getting, hopefully, the results we want in the long term. So that seems to be the strategy here from Amazon. And it kind of reminds me, John, of the strategy the NBA adopted back in the early 2000s, knowing that they were going to lose viewership numbers, knowing that by having the Eastern Conference Finals and the Western Conference Finals on TNT and on ESPN, you weren't going to get the same number that you were getting with the conference finals being on NBC. But that's the strategy. The money's there. The opportunities are there. I will say sort of to piggyback and to throw this back at you, John, what should we make of the youth, that number, that younger trend through streaming that NASCAR was hoping for? Are they pleased with that piece?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think they obviously are touting that. It's not just that the audience was younger. So this is something that Mike Mulvihill was tweeting about over the weekend. Well, of course, your median age is going to get younger if older people aren't tuning in. If you're losing five older people for every one young person you add, that's still not very good. Well, maybe. The point that I think NASCAR would make is this was our most watched, you know, this was our most watched race outside of broadcast television in the 3 years of the big data era. So that's another part of this that I did not mention. This was the first race measured or sold primarily on the big data basis. Not just the first race, the first sports TV program, I believe, that was sold primarily on big data. Big data's been out there for 3 years. So you will be able to do year-over-year comparisons and even two-year comparisons with this data. I've seen big data numbers for mainstream properties from the NFL, which Amazon put out. I've seen them for other leagues where, you know, it makes a difference. Didn't make that much of a difference for NASCAR, to be honest, because if you saw the reporting by Austin Karp, the panel only, that's a traditional measure, was 2.6 million. So not that big of a jump. The point is, this was the most watched race on outside of broadcast television since big data began 3 years ago in all of the key adult demographics, 18 to 34, 18 to 49, 25 to 54. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean much? Because obviously, you're talking about FS1 and USA Network. I think Amazon, you're signing with Amazon not to compete with FS1 and USA Network, but to compete with Fox and NBC, right? That's the ultimate goal, is that your Amazon numbers will be on a level with your Fox and NBC numbers. So maybe it's not that impressive, but certainly if you're NASCAR, you can say right off the bat, we did better than we normally do for cable races with this race. Now, how did that compare to last year's Coca-Cola 600 on Fox? That's actually a question I wish I'd asked, now that I think about it. That would be pretty important to know, wouldn't it? You know, but probably if it had been up from last year's Coca-Cola 600 on Fox, we would know. They would have said so. So you're not getting the younger viewers that you would get on broadcast. The whole point of going to Amazon is to get those younger viewers who are not available through the traditional bundle. And broadcast television is often watched through the bundle. So the fact that you're not getting to that point, to me, I don't know, it kind of makes it kind of colors that accomplishment of most watched among younger viewers since X, if it's only on cable.
What I'm thinking about is this, because I'm sure someone has already done this, and I want to know from you, is it fair to line the Coke 600 up against the Indy 500? I don't feel that that's a fair comparison. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm curious why you don't think it's a fair comparison.
Well, because you had Fox, you had broadcast, and you had the Indy 500, which is this historic race that's on par with the Daytona 500 versus Coke 600, which is not as prominent and as respected a race. I mean, the Indy 500 is synonymous with Memorial Day weekend. So I just don't see them on the same level. Now, you can convince me that I'm wrong on that, and I'd love to know if you think I am.
Well, you're right that the Indy 500 is far bigger than the Coca-Cola 600, but there was a long period of time that happened to encompass when I started writing about sports television ratings, where the Coca-Cola 600 beat the Indy 500 every year. Every year, even the Danica year, the Coca-Cola 600 beat the Indy 500. So for me, I look at the Coca-Cola 600 as a race that, at worst, should at least be running at a certain pace with Indy. You would have to go back 20 years was 2005. You'd have to go back 30 years to find when the Indy 500, you know, was out there winning that head-to-head every year. for the Indy 500 to beat the Daytona 500 is shocking. But even just to beat the Coca-Cola 600 is something that was not typical for a long time. So that's kind of why I think it's a fair comparison, because for many years, the Coca-Cola 600 was the Indy 500's competition, not Daytona. The fact that the Indy 500 took Fox, you know, took that Coca-Cola 600 slot on Fox. I mean, not the exact time slot, but and then immediately got 7 million viewers while NASCAR fell under 3 million is really notable to me. I'm not saying that NASCAR made a mistake going to Prime. I don't think necessarily that it did. But I do think that, to me, you can't overlook. I mean, it's rare to have as clear a signal as Indy stayed on broadcast TV and went to the network people most associate with racing, while NASCAR left broadcast TV and went to a streamer. And now you have a 4 million viewer gap between two events that were not, you know, that separate before. I mean, that's kind of crazy. I mean, NASCAR is in an interesting spot, because the most watched motorsports race of the year will be the Indy 500. It is really rare to go through a whole year where NASCAR did not have the most watched race. Like, that's unusual. I think NASCAR could maybe lose some serious ground as it's trying to build out this Prime Video platform. And it's so interesting, because I always bring up this quote by Ed Gorin from 20 years ago, from 2005, when NASCAR was at its height, where Ed Gorin pointed out, between NASCAR and the NBA, NASCAR had become an over-the-air sport and the NBA had become a cable sport. And I think he said something to the effect of, the results speak for themselves. Well, that's NASCAR and IndyCar right now. It's impossible to imagine that IndyCar, outside of Indy, will be able to really make up any ground with NASCAR. But if the Indy 500 is the top motorsports event every single year, I think they'll take it. And that's kind of the concern if you're NASCAR. Like, you don't really want to take for granted. And they're not taking it for granted, but they kind of are. They understand the importance of broadcast television. But broadcast television is airing fewer races this year than ever. So I really do think that the strategy makes sense, but it's really risky for them.
I have so many thoughts here. Should Prime at least be encouraged by the fact that they retained about a third of their audience for post-race coverage?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they don't do post-race coverage in NASCAR, right? I mean, you're off the air. That's one of the things about broadcast TV that is a negative, is you're off the air fast, right? So NASCAR having a 67-minute post-race show, and, I mean, over a million viewers, didn't even end till after midnight. There is a very loyal audience there. NASCAR is not like the other sports, right? It's not that many casual NASCAR fans. If you're tuning in, you really do care. Frankly, it kind of makes me think that Speed Channel probably shouldn't have been snuffed out, but whatever. That's a long, long, you know, way away. But there's a lot to be encouraged by if you're Prime and if you're NASCAR, but there's warning signs too. I mean, it's a calculated risk, and it played out pretty much exactly as you might think. Because, you know, the other thing too is, the real shocker to me, beyond the Indy gap, this race didn't do that much better than the Monaco Grand Prix. I mean, there's no universe where F1 and NASCAR, when you're talking about the Coca-Cola 600, should be in the same, you know, general range. Who knows what might happen in the next few years where, I mean, F1 is not going to catch NASCAR, but I don't know. But then again, that's part of the reason why this Prime deal exists, because F1 is catching up to NASCAR and those younger viewers. You have to find the younger viewers where they are, but they're actually more available on broadcast TV than on streaming. So what are you really chasing? You might be chasing, obviously, as makes sense, a bigger payday, which, I mean, that's the whole point. The money that you make from media rights is way more important than the audience that you get. It's just that if you get a lot of money in your media rights and your audience shrinks to the point where you don't get as much money in the next deal, then it backfires.
And that's really what my concern is. Fans, like you said, bless the NASCAR fans, bless the racing fans. They are a loyal bunch. But when you test my loyalty by making me work harder to go find what has been closer to me, now it becomes a question of how bad do I want this? Now it becomes, and to me, I don't think you want to put your fans in that predicament where they could find themselves sort of robbing Peter to pay Paul, maybe not paying for something over here to pay for a Prime subscription over here if they're really diehard NASCAR fans. I just don't like where we're going. Not much we can do about it at this point because there's so much money on the line and there's so much money being thrown at these leagues and these organizations, and I get that. But as a fan, I don't like having to work so hard for what I want to see. I don't like having to work so hard to abandon what's already been there, the Foxes and the NBCs and the CBSs and the ESPNs. I don't like the idea of having to abandon those things to race out and go find my content on an Amazon Prime or Netflix or streamer.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, ease is important. It's easier to find Fox. And Fox is like not necessarily the number three on your dial. Sometimes it's number 25 on your dial, but it's still easier to find it than to find Prime Video. And so even if you have Prime, which many people do, you're just not accustomed to it. And are you willing to go out of your way to change your habits to watch the Coca-Cola 600? A lot of people probably said no, you know? I mean, it's going to be difficult next year. Like, are you willing to go out of your way to go watch Timberwolves Suns on Peacock on a Monday night in January? Just because people have a service doesn't mean they're going to tune in. We kind of just assume that having the service, I mean, if I'm watching YouTube TV to watch linear sports and there's a Timberwolves game on Peacock, am I going to exit out of the YouTube TV app to go to the Peacock app if I happen to be interested in, say, another game or another show or anything like that? You know, remember, with these streamers, you're kind of locked into their ecosystem as long as you're watching the game. It's not easy to just switch to something else. So people might have it. There might be NASCAR fans who have Prime who didn't feel like exiting out of another app they were using on Sunday night to watch the race. That's another factor. A lot of sports viewing is done idly. It's not done with intention. And when you create an intentionality, yeah, the diehard fans, of which NASCAR has a great number, will be there. But there's a lot of other people who have watched NASCAR races because they just switched over, saw it on, and left their TVs. Then people might be comfortable thinking. A lot of sports viewing is done without any real intention.
Absolutely. Passive viewership is a real thing. And you know that because you can go to any bar or restaurant, those games are on. Nobody's watching those games. They're there to create an atmosphere. The channels, the TV's on ESPN because it goes with the vibe of the bar and grill. But there's no real active watching. There's no active viewership. And the point you make is so key there. It is being made more difficult now for fans to passively watch sports, for there to just sort of be this game on in the background while the family talks and chats and does whatever we're doing. You've got to make the investment. And the question now is, are viewers willing to make that investment? Are viewers willing to go out of their way to go get the content they want, to go watch the games or the events they want to watch? And time is going to tell what happens there.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
If you have, in a couple of years, a Western Conference Finals like OKC, Minnesota on Amazon, are people even going to bother to click? Right? Because you have to seek it out. And it's boring. You know it's boring. You're not interested. That's going to be a tough one. So that's me creating a nice little segue to talk about Oklahoma City and Minnesota. So game five of that series, I just got this number in my inbox here, 4.6 million viewers. So I can see from your reaction, you can tell that that's pretty low. So I'm going to do a little bit of math here right as we speak. And I can tell you that is the least watched conference final game since 2021. And it is the least watched conference final game four in the West. So in the West, since 2007. Now, that is, and I want to be clear, I'm not excluding the bubble when I say that. So 4.6 million for game four, game five, everything else is accurate. 4.62 million for game five back in 2020 on a college football Saturday in September. Nuggets Lakers game five had nearly 5 million, 4.99. So this is lower than the bubble, which is really rare for the NBA. Okay. By the way, 2021, which wasn't the bubble, but it was the end of June, Clippers Suns, that was 5.81 million for that game five. So look, the point is Oklahoma City, they win very easily. I'm not sure if you happened to see this, the chart I put up on the site the other day with the Thunder's viewership this postseason and some of these margins. OKC led by 56 in game one against Memphis. They led by 49 in game two against Denver. They trailed by 45 in game three against Minnesota. Led by 43 in game seven against Denver. Led by 39 in game five against Minnesota. Trailed by 29 in game three against Memphis, a game they won, led by 26 in game one against Minnesota, led by 24 in game two against Minnesota, led by 23 in game two against Memphis. And these are ridiculous, lopsided scores, particularly the ones that are 30 and 40 points. And so it's going to be a painful finals for the NBA if that continues. I kind of don't see how it wouldn't continue because I look at this Pacers-Knicks series as a very fun, very exciting matchup of teams that are not as good as the Oklahoma City Thunder. But what do you think?
So let me get this straight. The series lost almost 2 million viewers from game four to five. Because game four, you had 6.5. And game five, you had what? What, 4.6 you just said?
4.6.
Well, I don't know what positives exist here. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is 26 years old. He's got a lot of time to move from stardom into superstardom. And with that comes so many opportunities for the Oklahoma City Thunder to establish perhaps a bit of a dynasty here. If they can keep this core intact, no injuries, no wacky things happen, this could really be a stretch here. These guys are so young. At the same time, who in the West can compete? You've got LeBron and Steph, and we keep going back to these guys because these are the faces of your league. These guys are exiting. LeBron's 40. Steph is approaching 40. KD's approaching 40. And you've got a mid-20s star in Oklahoma City, and a team running roughshod across the league, it could be a bad stretch for everybody else in the NBA for a good 3 to 7 year period here. If Oklahoma, and I'm being generous with that, if Oklahoma City keeps this up, it could really be a dominant stretch for the Thunder here, which could have some negative effects on ratings. And I think we're seeing that this dominant series over Minnesota is a prime example of what we're talking about.
Well, somebody on the site, one of my commenters, made a very correct point, which is NBC's coming back into the NBA that it left, right? They missed out on that whole LeBron era, the whole super team era, and they're coming right back to the version of the NBA that scared them off, right? Where, you know, you didn't really, you know, I remember the Neil Best headline, Neil Best of Newsday in about 07. He wrote an article with the headline, NBA not compelling. Well, I mean, he probably didn't write the headline, but that was the headline of the article. And I mean, yeah, that's the concern. Now, Pacers-Knicks has been very compelling. This OKC-Minnesota series, every series, I mean, OKC-Denver was pretty good. You know, it had its blowouts, but it was pretty good. If I'm the NBA, I want to see, I don't want to see what I've been seeing in that Minnesota series. That was a conference final. And I know the NHL had a very similar result with Carolina and Florida. But, you know, with all due respect, you don't really want the NHL to be your company, right? Maybe for the Four Nations face-off, but not at any other point. And the fact that, oh, well, hey, the NHL, the Eastern Conference Finals was rough there too. Okay, well, the NHL, you know, makes a lot less money than the NBA in media rights. You know, it's kind of more important that the NBA be more entertaining, right? There's a lot more money on the line. And a lot of people paid a lot of money for a product where I saw this stat on Reddit. I kind of felt bad because it's the kind of stat that I would normally come up with and I missed it. ESPN, in all of the years it's had the NBA, when they've had the Western Conference Finals, it's only gone past Game 5 twice. All the Western Conference Finals, they had the Western Conference Finals the first time in 2005, 20 years. Every single time they've had the Western Conference Finals, it's ended in five or fewer games, except two times. One was in July, Suns and Clippers, and the other one was Kobe and the Lakers against Denver in 09. ESPN has had two Western Conference Finals Game 6s all time, and none that were in a Game 7. You can't rig the results, but you got to figure out a way to ensure these series are more competitive, even if it's just affecting the way the games are called, some of the rules. They did it to end the Pistons and Spurs era to speed up the game in the mid-2000s. They got to do something similar here just to get rid of the blowouts, at least.
I was looking back at NBA Finals ratings from the past. Back in 2020, you had the Lakers and the Heat. And I think the best viewership number for that series was 9.2 million. Is it possible, John, that no games in this Oklahoma City series reach that number?
No, I mean, I do not expect the numbers to be in the bubble range. You know, the bubble is a very interesting time in NBA ratings because everybody remembers the finals and the finals did horribly. But the rest of the bubble was actually not that bad. I mean, the bubble was trending about where you saw the NBA in 2007. Like, it wasn't unprecedented or anything. The finals, that was a disaster. But the conference finals, as I said, there's a few games from the bubble in the conference finals that rank higher than games from past years. And obviously, as we saw this past Wednesday, games from this past year as well. So the finals, though, was unique. Remember, you're talking about Trump is in the hospital with COVID. People are, you know, very concerned about that. You have two games on NFL Sundays. There's just, I can't see this being in that range. Now, the 9.2 million was for Game 5 when it looked like the Lakers might clinch. To me, I would look at Suns-Bucks as being the more likely outcome for this finals, where you had, at the low end, 8.7 million for game one, and then kind of 9, maybe 10 million. Then it went 6, so it got to nearly 13 million. I do think, because it'll be a short series, I'm quite sure it'll be a short series, that you will see it will be lower than Suns-Bucks in the average, because it's not going to get that game 6 bump. But I think the numbers on a game-to-game basis will be in line with that. Now, we could all be shocked. One, if New York comes back from 3-1 down and makes it to the finals after a 3-1 comeback, there's going to be some serious momentum. If the Knicks get through this series and you have the momentum of a 3-1 comeback involving the nation's number one market, you'll see some better numbers than Suns Bucks. I'm going on the assumption that it'll be Indiana winning on Saturday. I do suspect that the numbers are going to be pretty low. They're going to be blowouts, small markets. It's not going to be good.
You know, I'm thinking about how in 03, you had Spurs Nets, which was at the time, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, a disaster for ABC and for the NBA, their first finals, and the ratings were very poor. But the following year, you got LA-Detroit. And I think one of those games, LA-Detroit, reached 22 million, right? Okay. 07, you get another disastrous number with the Spurs and the Cavaliers. The following year, you get 08, you get the Lakers and the Celtics, which, of course, performed far better. I don't know if after this, we'll have a similar result, John. And I think that's the difference between what we've seen in the past with low finals versus what we'll see now. I don't see where you get that Lakers-Celtics 08 recovery or that Lakers-Pistons 04 recovery. And so we're looking a bit at this year, but we're also looking at the state of the NBA from a viewership number, from a viewership number standpoint. And there do seem, at least to me, to be a lot more questions than answers and reasons to be as encouraged as David Stern and the NBA probably were in the mid-2000s.
I mean, look, let's be completely real here. The NBA wanted parity, and they got it in the worst way. They got randomness, and they got dominance. They got teams that every single year, there's one team that just blasts the other team off the court. It's 2025, right? We're halfway through the 2020s. The roaring 20s, and the roaring was worse than we could have imagined. The best finals rating of this decade is Nuggets Heat. And I don't mean in terms of average viewership. I mean in terms of how the series performed relative to expectations. That series, to me, is the strongest finals number of the decade, because Warriors-Celtics should have done way better. So if you're getting through a decade and you're saying, wow, our best finals performance in the ratings was Denver-Miami, what? What's going on here? You know, I don't believe Stern was rigging the results, obviously. I think that's absurd. But he was very responsive when the ratings were a problem. But I think everyone is less responsive. We just had the conversation about NASCAR. I think everyone is less responsive because the ratings are not the most important thing. The rights fees are the most important thing. And the ratings and the rights fees have been completely decoupled because the most important thing to the networks now is content. Not how many people, but the content itself. For the NBA, why, you know, we always hear, well, why should we as fans care about the ratings? Why should Adam Silver as a commissioner care about the ratings? Why should the owners care about the ratings? They just got a $77 billion media rights deal. Like, why should they care? And by the time the bill comes due, by the time you are having to look for an increase over this current deal, you know, Adam Silver probably won't be the commissioner anymore. So it's not really going to be his problem. The NBA wanted parity. And nobody would go into a push for parity expecting it to pay off in the ratings. Parity's always been bad for ratings. The only good kind of parity is what you have in women's college basketball, where you have five or six superstar teams that trade the championship between each other. You don't know which one of them's going to win, but you know that one of them's going to win. That's good parity. Bad parity is basically what the NBA has, where if this was the NFL, it'd be like, wow, man, the Jaguars, they're killing everybody. The Jaguars keep winning every game by 30 points. That would be horrible for the NFL. People talk up the NFL as parity. Do you know who made the Super Bowl 3 years in a row? Now, yes, Kansas City is a small market team, but they are a team with superstars that obviously people enjoy watching. And they don't just win every game in a blowout. In fact, they got blown out in the Super Bowl. But if you remember the article I wrote last year, they play all these incredibly close games. the parody that the NBA has is the worst kind of parody. If Oklahoma City was out there playing the way Indiana does, with exciting games every single time, it would be completely different.
So we are clearly out of the super team era, and I'm trying to think. If the LeBron, D. Wade, Chris Bosh, then the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, if you want to throw him in there, if that was the super team era, what is this era, John? What do we call this?
The stupor team era. They put us all into a stupor.
I have a cold, and you made me laugh hard, John. And oh, boy. But we are clearly out. We're clearly out of the super team era, but now we're in an era where there's just constant dominance, and it's not compelling. I said it last week. We talked about it. I said it as a question because it kind of struck me, because you don't really think about it. But we have not had a seven-game NBA Finals since 2016, and we're not going to have one this year. There is no way, with the way Oklahoma City has played, as dominant as they are, there's no way we're going to get a super compelling NBA Finals. I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, to have a super compelling NBA Finals, you have to have two really, really good teams at the same time, which the NBA has not had since the days of LeBron and Golden State. Now, I know they lucked into a really good Finals with Toronto and the Warriors, but it's because Kevin Durant was hurt. People, you know, I'm not taking anything away from Toronto. That's probably 4-1. You saw Kevin Durant come into Game 5, and in one quarter, you're like, oh yeah, Toronto's going to lose. They were up 3-1, and the only thing that saved them was him tearing his Achilles. Right. So to me, to have two good teams at the same time is something the NBA has not had in a shockingly long time, not even in the conference finals. You know, the other thing, too, the NBA's parity is just mediocre teams who had bad seasons making deep runs, whether it's Miami, the 5 seed in 20, or Minnesota, the 6 seed this year, the Lakers, the 7 seed, and the Heat, the 8 seed in 2023. You know, I don't know the last time you had a number one versus number two in the conference finals. I mean, I do know it was Miami-Boston back in 2022, and that was, I think, the last series that was not 3-1 in the conference finals, right? Think about it. Every single series is 3-1 in the conference finals every year. So, you know, parity has not worked out for the NBA. They got to figure something out. I mean, maybe they don't. They have their money. We've seen what the ratings for the finals have been, and ESPN was like, we demand every year to have the finals in their negotiations. So, there's really nothing at stake here, except you might have a few mean tweets. I don't really think anyone in the NBA cares about that. They've been getting mean tweets since before Twitter existed about their ratings. Mm-hmm. So maybe there's nothing at stake here.
Adam Silver and the gang will be laughing all the way to the bank as folks mock them on X or Instagram or Facebook or what have you. $77 billion, needless to say, is a whole lot of money.
And well, I don't know exactly what Amazon's paying NASCAR, but same exact deal. You know, yep. you look and you say, man, I can't believe the Indy 500 beat the Coca-Cola 600 so badly. And if you're NASCAR, you're like, oh, well, how much money did IndyCar get from Fox? Because that number has never surfaced. IndyCar, we know they took less money. They said they took less money. Are they even getting any money? Is this one of those old NHL on NBC deals? The media rights fees matter more than the ratings. You're going to get more money for a smaller audience. That's always been the trade. The companies that are willing to spend the money are not the companies that everyone can access for free. They're the companies that you need to pay money to access. They're the companies that are trying to build themselves up. When you are putting yourself in front of the biggest possible audience, like IndyCar is, you're kind of sacrificing money to do so. Fox doesn't need, you know, IndyCar. Amazon Prime needs NASCAR. And so you make that trade, and ultimately you get more money in the process. And if IndyCar gets a bigger audience, that doesn't really matter, although it seems impossible that it doesn't matter. But I do think that the mindset is that it doesn't matter as much as maybe the rest of us, those of us who write about the ratings and consume information about the ratings, might think. All right, let's go ahead and talk about a related topic really quickly. The end of Inside the NBA is almost here. It'll be Saturday or it'll be Monday. And, you know, I'm working on a little TNT video that I hope to put up, by the time it's all over. Everyone kind of has a view of the NBA on TNT as being synonymous with Ernie, Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq. And they obviously have been great. But one, obviously all the play-by-play folks, analysts, sideline reporters, behind-the-scenes folks. But also, TNT had the NBA for maybe a decade before Kenny and Chuck showed up, 2 decades before Shaq showed up. And I do think it's really important. This is 40 years. It's not just EJ, Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq, or even Harlan and Eagle and all these other folks. It's Pete Van Wieren and Skip Carey from the Braves. You know, I mean, it's Ron Thulin. It's all of these folks, Vern Lundquist and Doc Rivers. And, you know, it's really a tradition that dates way back before Inside. And if you include the TBS days, you're talking about Bird and Magic. You know, you're talking about Bird Steele was on TBS. These are iconic moments. I don't know how Turner's going to go off the air after their final show, but I do hope that they leave a little bit of room, not just for the non-inside aspects of the modern broadcast, but for all of what this has been. For Jim Huber, obviously they're going to talk about Sager, I'm sure. Maybe even a David Aldridge, you know, like all these people who have been part of the show in all of its different iterations. I hope that they have a little bit of an acknowledgement, because Inside the NBA is going to continue. The NBA on TNT was not only Inside the NBA. And I do think there should be a little bit of acknowledgement of the whole aspect of it.
That's one of the things that's bothered me, to be honest with you. This has become a tribute to Inside the NBA. But people have forgotten about how deep the roots are when you talk about the NBA on TNT. You mentioned some names. Let's go a little deeper. Dick Stockton, Hubie Brown. How about Bob Neal? Rick Barry was a part of their coverage. John Thompson, Bill Russell, Danny Ainge, Cheryl Miller, Reggie's sister, was one of their prominent reporters for many, many years. Jim Huber, an excellent essayist. Oh, he was so good. So wonderful. And also did some other stuff for Turner before he passed away some years ago. People have forgotten about how rich TNT and TBS's coverage of the NBA has been over the past 4 decades. And so I know that there was just this, I guess, a documentary going inside where they tracked the final season of Inside the NBA. But I do hope, as you said, John, I hope TNT, I hope they really allow people to have the opportunity to understand just how far back this goes and how it's so much bigger than Inside the NBA. Somehow or another, and like maybe it happened after Steve Kerr left, they never really recovered from losing Steve Kerr as a game analyst. Steve Kerr was an excellent game analyst, folks. But somehow somewhere along the lines there, TNT's coverage of the NBA became solely about Inside the NBA. And they started de-emphasizing their game coverage and elevating their studio coverage. But their game coverage was great for many years. Doug Collins, back in the 90s, was a top analyst for Turner Sports. He was great then. And then, of course, we know him for his years with Kevin Harlan and with Marv Albert in the 2000s before he left to take the job with the Chicago Bulls. But you're talking about some of the absolute best analysts and best play-by-play people, best production crews, best sideline reporters that the industry has known. And that needs to be highlighted just as much, if not more, than Ernie, Kenny, Chuck, and the Shaq from inside the NBA. It's so much deeper than what people realize.
You're absolutely right. The other thing, too, I feel like a lot of the appreciations for inside the NBA are from people who only see clips circulating on social media. They don't really watch the show. You know, to me, the NBA on TNT deserves a broader and deeper tribute, as you said. I'm hoping to, a lot of those names you mentioned are in my video, and hopefully I'll be able to actually get it done. You know, it was an interesting experience the other night after Game 4. I was at Game 4 in Cambridge Fieldhouse and was watching them film inside the NBA. And then, you know, watching them live and then going back to the hotel and watching the documentary. The documentary was interesting. It didn't seem entirely necessary. In fact, even in the documentary, I think it was Chuck saying, "We're not even going off the air. Why are you doing this?" I feel like maybe inside the NBA is still good. You know, I've had my criticisms of it. I'm not backing off of those. But they've certainly, since the playoffs have started, I feel like it's not been nearly as negative about the game as it was. Part of that is, I think LeBron and the Warriors going out early made Charles a little bit less negative. It does seem they've been mostly positive. And Charles in particular has been, you know, at the top of his game, including yesterday with that line about how he was close enough to the roof to touch God. Did you see it? Did you hear that line?
I did.
Now, he's been at the top of his game. But look, I definitely feel like the less inside is turning its focus inward, the better. And so hopefully after this year ends and they move on to ESPN, they won't be doing kind of the self-referential inward-looking aspect. When networks lose rights, they typically save that for the end, the very final, you know, broadcast. NBC had a few hints here and there in its final season that it was losing the NBA. But, you know, there were no documentaries about it or, you know, I mean, I just feel like inside is great. I'm not suggesting otherwise. I just feel like maybe a little bit less of the self-referential aspect and a little bit less of the defensiveness. Like, I know Shaq was just doing a wrestling hit yesterday, but, you know, nobody's wronging you guys. You just lost the rights. It happens. And by the way, the show goes on. Not only does it go on, it goes on with you guys having to do less work. And the work that you are doing is going to be the biggest and most significant assignment you've ever had on the NBA Finals. Everything's actually worked out really well for you guys, at least the core four, who are all getting huge salaries. I mean, Shaq's $15 million a year salary. It's unbelievable. You know, I don't know how much Ernie and Kenny make. So let me just say, for Shaq and Chuck, they're making huge money. And I just think the show is better when it's just about the basketball, with maybe a few sly jokes here or there referencing their situation.
I saw the clip of Marv Albert celebrating Kenny Albert passing him for most national NHL broadcasts or national television broadcasts. And I was thinking to myself, you're in New York. You can't get Marv Albert to do a little 3 or 4 minute sit down with you. It doesn't even have to be Marv. I'm trying to capture the spirit of the idea, you know, just some sort of reference to more than inside the NBA, some sort of connection, bridging the gap, helping fans understand just how far back all of this goes. It would have been nice to allow people to see more than just Chuck and Shaq wrestling or Kenny knocking Shaq over, you know, by the Christmas tree for the 80,000th time. Just would have been nice.
There's a Frasier episode titled "It's Hard to Say Goodbye If You Won't Leave." And I've been thinking about that title throughout this season because they're coming back. Even though a lot of these folks on the game crew side are coming back next year, they're going to be split up. It's not going to be Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller. They're not going to work together again. That's a great team that they've had, Kevin and Reggie, and that's over with. Maybe Kevin will work with Stan Van Gundy again if they're going to be both at Amazon. I don't know. But there's a lot of, like, Reggie was on the studio team yesterday for the start. I thought that was poetic because he used to do a lot of that before Shaq came in. Reggie is not going to be working with them anymore. They're going to be on two totally different teams. So there's a lot of it where, yeah, it's coming back in terms of the studio crew will be intact, and a lot of the analysts and play-by-play voices and sideline reporters will be somewhere. But it's never, it's not going to be the same again. This was a nice little thing that they had going. Maybe a little bit too much focus has been on the one group that we know is coming back the exact same.
I would have loved to see some flashbacks. The Steve Kerr three-point barrage against the Mavericks in the West Finals, where Marv Albert goes, Kerr, again!
Yeah. But if they go off the air tomorrow, do they go off the air with a montage of game clips? Or do they go off the air with a montage of studio clips?
Or do they do something like what they did before the last game? Game before last, maybe, where there was like this 8 or 9 minute segment filled with old Inside the NBA clips. I hope they do some game stuff, John. The Jordan All-Star Jumper, his final All-Star game in Atlanta. I would love to see that. Maybe hear some stories about that.
Even just an acknowledgement that Inside the NBA began before Shaq got there. All of these montages, I don't know, how many clips did they have in their montage from before Shaq got there?
I'd have to go back and watch it. I'm sure there were a couple off top of my head. But my goodness, I mean, you can even go back to when Craig Sager hosted the thing.
Yeah. I mean, you had Fred Hickman and Hannah Storm, I think, hosted it at varying points. The NBA on TNT is a rich source of content. But Inside, even just by itself, is as well. And nearly all of the memories are just from the last 14 years since Shaq got there. Because most people, it's kind of like with the NBA and NBC, the nostalgia trap that I talk about, where people kind of just remember the big hits. And they don't really remember the depth of it. There's more to this show than the last 14 years. There's more to the NBA on TNT than the last 14 years of the studio show. And while we should appreciate what we've seen with EJ, Kenny, Chuck, and Shaq, I just hope that we can get something bigger and broader that covers the entire, really, Ted Turner's vision, right? You know, Ted Turner used the NBA to build TNT. Because this was a TBS deal that had an option to put the games on TNT after a certain time. They used the NBA to build up TNT. And so that's what I hope my video will kind of give a little bit more of that. And maybe TNT will do a better job than I do. Certainly they'll have the resources to. But just in case they don't, I hope that my video plays, fills a bit of a gap there.
I'll be looking forward.
All right. Well, that's it for the SMW podcast this week. We'll be back with more stuff.
Tired of the price of everything going up these days? Groceries, rent, you name it. It's all going up. But not at Metro. They've got your back. Metro has lowered their prices and are giving you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. One line, now 20% lower. Family plans, also lowered. Oh, and you also get a free 5G phone. All with no ID required and no activation fees. Stop by your neighborhood Metro store, visit metrobytmobile.com, or call to find out about their amazing offers. Bring your number. Not available if currently at T-Mobile or with Metro in the past 180 days. Guarantee covers monthly price of on-network talk, text, and 5G data for customers activating on an eligible plan. Exclusions apply. Details at metrobytmobile.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.